Ladies and gentlemen, we are now boarding Group A. Please have your boarding passes ready to scan. If your phone is cracked, old, or was chewed up by your Chihuahua travel companion, please refrain from holding up the line. And instead, simply go to Verizon and trade in any phone in any condition from one of their top brands for the new Samsung Galaxy S25 Plus with Galaxy AI on Unlimited Ultimate and a watch or tab, also on them.
Service plan required for watch or tab. Trade-in and additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McKusick. We're back with Yuri to talk about the offense against the Commanders, the second part of this show. Very pleasant conversation, not only just because Yuri knows a lot about football, but second of all, because it's a very, very positive outcome for the Ravens and a great offensive game. We had a lot of fun talking about Lamar's incredible day in terms of productivity relative to the opportunity set in part one. We talked a lot about Derrick Henry, about blocking schemes for him that have been very effective. Yuri talked a lot about you know, more under center play, has allowed more options for crack toss, has allowed more options to get Henry to the outside. Of course, that's where you get him some smaller tackling opportunities. That's been a big part of how he's been effective this year, is more yards before contact. So we got into that a little bit. We talked a little bit about Devontae Adams, more about Amari Cooper and that trade. If you want to go back and take that a list, a little bit about the rivalry itself and whether, in fact, that's even a good thing. Do the Ravens really want a rival in DC, or were they happy to have that franchise flame out and move somewhere else? But anyway, we are where we are on that. Back for part two of the show here, Yuri. Let's start off by introducing you. Sorry, I didn't already say hi here, but where can folks talk football with you?
Yeah, so anyone can find me on Yuri_Ravens on Twitter. They can find me at Ravens Web Podcast on YouTube, and they can find me every Wednesday with Huddle Up Films. We go live around 9:15, just talking kind of the similar stuff, just appreciating some good Ravens football going on right now.
All right. All right, so let's talk a little bit of offensive line right now. And I'll just give a short synopsis of what I saw on this. There's only two penalties in the game, both false start penalties. So those are only relatively minor negative scores because they don't involve an option for the defense. Six pressures, two quarterback hits, two sacks charged to the offensive line in this game. Actually, only two sacks, but only one and a third charged to the off. No, not true. Two and a third charged to the offensive line because of a strange quirk we'll get into later. But the ATS opportunities were good at 36%. So normally, you know, 27-28% would be a pretty typical number, but that was a good one for the Ravens in this game.
The one thing that is bothering me, I am driven up the wall, is false starts at home. Mm-hmm. I don't know how that's happening. I don't know why that's happening. But it had false starts at away, Kansas City, and all those stadiums get loud. I understand. People make mistakes, I understand. But when you're at home and you got that home crowd at your back, you just can't be. You can't be false start. You can't. It drives me up a wall. So, and this is a common theme that's happened a couple times throughout the year now. So, that seeing those continuously happen is very frustrating.
That the Ravens, they do have a good home crowd, and they have a very knowledgeable home crowd on when to be quiet. But there were a lot of Commanders fans there, and part of it was ticket prices had driven out a lot of Ravens fans out of their seats. So that was kind of an unfortunate byproduct of the rival being only 32 miles away, as you get a lot of Commanders fans coming in for the game.
For sure, and that's another thing that drove me up the wall was the Commanders fans taking over the stadium a little bit. Ravens still have most majority, but would definitely prefer to see that ratio to come back, swing back our way a little more.
All right, so I'll just start off. We'll talk about Ronnie Stanley to start with here. He had a good game. I think he did not quite have as good game as some people would say he had, but 63 plays, he made 56 of his blocks, missed three. Gave up two pressures in the game. We're seeing a lot of Ronnie giving up the pressures we're used to Ronnie Stanley giving up in the distant past, which is a lot of proximity pressures, a lot of getting in the cone. PFF sometimes doesn't even consider them pressures. I do, which is a good thing. That means they're kind of borderline. And Lamar does very well at working around those and maintaining his eyes downfield, even when he gets bumped. What you can't allow to happen is for Lamar, the opposing defensive end, outside edge guy to get his hands on Lamar. If he gets his hands on Lamar and moves him around, that's a recipe for very bad things to happen. But Stanley's been exceptionally good at preventing that. Did give up 2/3 of a quarterback hit as well as the 2 pressures. 1/3 of a sack that he shared with Rosengarten. And 48 points, 0.76 is a raw score, 0.81 grossed up for an adjustment. The nice thing about him in this game is nine level 2 blocks. That's something we've seen a lot of from Stanley this year. The return of that mobility has been very nice in terms of being through with the ankle injury.
For sure. And that's what we pointed out earlier was that he working downfield, being able to be that athlete in space again, has had a huge effect on the run game. You've seen the Ravens run a lot to the left, and Ronnie Stanley is probably one of the biggest reasons why they're running to the left is just his ability to play out in space and get to level 2 and make those blocks and seal off running lanes is very impressive.
Yeah, the young Ronnie Stanley was remarkable in beating all my expectations. I have expectations built into the grading scale for tackles not being able to make backside run blocks as frequently as other positions. And so tackles have a more lenient scale of points they need to achieve certain grade levels. It has that expectation built in. Ronnie Stanley breaks all that. He has a much lower percentage of missed blocks than other tackles on either side of the ball because he's so such good foot speed and such good mobility to get at a level 2. Also, it's very decisive. And he finds a cornerback that he wants to try and block down the field. And those are the kind of blocks. They don't seem important always, but they're the ones that turn 10-yard runs into 30-yard runs.
For sure. And then working way, way downfield, you saw, I'm sure we're going to get to it, but Falele was way down there. And, you know, people may not think too much of that, but I value that hustle and ability to get downfield a lot at offensive linemen. So, speaking about it, Patrick McCary goes out there. I thought one of his better performances in terms of just holding up and pass protection. Run blocking, maybe not the best. He certainly has hands full with some bigger defensive linemen. I know Jonathan Allen went out there in the game. What'd you see from McCary?
Outstanding game. Best game of the year. And in fact, he's put together 2 in a row that I think I've made the decision final in terms of the Andrew Voorhees returning to left guard. Right away. But he had made 59 out of 63 blocks. He missed 3 and he gave up 1/3 of a quarterback hit. The 1/3 of a quarterback hit is a little bit weird. He was beaten to his outside and then that guy ran into the back of Stanley and I think it was Cleland Farrell who got the primary portion. He got 2/3 of that quarterback hit charge. A weird kind of a play, but McCary definitely was not completely blame-free on it. Other than that, he had a false start, and a false start is -2, so it's not a really big negative score like an option penalty would be. 56 points, gave him 0.89 as a raw score with adjustment. That's an A. The big thing he had otherwise, he did have 2 pancakes, and he doesn't collect a lot of pancake blocks typically. When he gets one, it's usually because he's being very good positionally and gets a guy to the ground that way. Oftentimes, a guy may be lunging for the ball carry. He puts him on the ground right away, finishes him, which is very important to do when that's happening, by the way. And he made 7 of his 8 pulls in this game. They've been having a lot of trouble with pulls from Voorhees and also pulls from right guard with Falele that he's just not doing a very good job being quick enough, frankly, to get to the most significant, most important block. But McCary was in this game. He was quite good. And, an A, he had his best game of the season. He had an A- last week. And frankly, Voorhees has not taken that position back while McCary is playing at this level.
Yeah. McCary should start the rest of the year at left guard. If you want to put your best 5 out there, He's certainly one of them. You want him to go out there and continue to be a very big plus in pass protection, like you pointed out, and also has been better than I expected in the run as well. So Tyler Linderbaum, I thought it was an average game for Tyler Linderbaum. Kind of he had his hands full with Payne and Allen for that first half. And Fidarian Mathis is another good product out of Alabama that is a very strong defensive lineman. And he is doing a good job in helping in terms of trying to get some of those combo blocks down. But I think, you know, I took a sneak peek at some of your scores. You gave him about a slightly below average scoring on this one.
Yeah, it was slightly below average game. It was his worst game of the year so far. And let me put it this way. If you think of the old PFF grading, and if you're an old guy and you know from 10 years ago how PFF used to present their grades in terms of everything is a plus or minus two, plus two to minus two scale, and they would give you like the accumulated value of the guy's scores for the entire year. And you'd see like 12.6 or 12.5 or whatever for a player. That's kind of a way to think about it. When you get a C in my system, you basically had maybe a PFF old school zero for the game. If you get a B, you probably had about a plus one or plus two for the game. And if you had an A, you had something better than that. So this was a game as a C minus for Linderbaum. So probably he'd be a slightly red number by the old PFF system. Made 57 of 63 blocks. He did miss three. Half a penetration he gave up. That was shared with Fa'alele on a play. He gave up a quarterback hit. That was kind of a bad play because Wagner was really just setting a pick as an under guy. And then he ends up with the better pass rushing opportunity that he just rolled right off of Linderbaum for a quarterback hit. And then the really bad play was the snap that went off his foot. And the problem with that was it's got to be scored. And there's only really one way to score it is as a sack in that case. So there weren't really three sacks, of which the line got two and a third. There were only two sacks, but the line ended up getting two and a third because of this extra play that was effectively a sack. So he had a similar one where he snapped the ball into the end zone. Lamar had to kick it out of the end zone last year against the Rams. Went for 2 points for the safety. I had to give him two thirds of that as a sack. This one, there's nobody else that's responsible. He's 100% responsible for that bad snap. Lamar wasn't even under center at the time. It was in shotgun that he ended up, you know, putting it off his foot. Fortunately, Lamar recovered it. They got the field goal, but it was a, you know, a significantly bad play. So anyway, 47 points, 0.75. The standard center is higher because they have, you know, many fewer missed blocks than the other offensive line positions. So you got an 80 after adjustment. That's a C minus. Now, to talk about some really good things about Tyler in this game, 9 level 2 blocks like Stanley. Now Tyler occasionally will have really outstanding level 2 games, and he is the Ravens' most mobile guy out there. But this is still an over-the-top impressive game to have 9 in a game, and it is a big part of driving the run game.
For sure, and the screen game as well, him being able to work laterally against screens and the zone running. What would you have Linderbaum as in the new PFF grade scale for? Because I've
for the year
certainly seen
not for this game, for the year, right? Let's see. I'll tell you right now because I want to go over to my sheet with before I'm misrepresenting this. So he's had every game has basically been average or above, with the exception of this one. But he's had C plus, B minus, A, C, A, C minus. So he's had, you know, three games that basically are average, would net out to about a zero, and then he's had three other games that are between good and outstanding. And he probably would be on the old school method. He might have been a plus 8 or plus 10 at this point in the season, which would probably be in the top 3 to 5, no worse than that of all centers at this point in the season. He's been outstanding. He's played at or very near a Pro Bowl level. This game was a small step back, but you know, if you do this over time and you score offensive line play game by game, there's a lot of variation. You don't get too concerned about it when a player has a single D or even an F performance once in a while. There's usually a reason for it. Even if there isn't a reason for it, it can be a couple fluke plays or a couple fluke penalties, even more likely.
For sure. We just wanted to get a little bit of context with the how the scaling worked. So Daniel Falele, by far his best game this year. He looked like a rock against pass protection. I brought up earlier he was working downfield on that screen to Zay Flowers to start off the game. So that very, very impressed, and I'm sure you saw similar things.
Yeah, he killed it. This was his best game as a pro. He had an earlier game this year where he had done well. And I got to remember, was it the opener or the second game? Because everybody was surprised at how I graded him. Yeah, it was the opener against the Chiefs. He had a B+ and it did not look the part at all, by the way, in this game. This game, and I've been saying this the last now 4 weeks, he's done something at an exceptionally high level every week. And one time he had like 9 or 11 level 2 blocks, and you're like, oh, this isn't the same guy anymore. And then he has some good run blocking in a game. Well, this week he did the most important thing of all well, which is pass blocking. Through an absolute perfect game in terms of pass blocks. No zeros or negative events on any of the Ravens' 28 pass plays. That's, first of all, that doesn't happen very often, period, for any player at any position. But he did exceptionally well in this game. His problems were on the run, and they were specifically with pulls. He had two times where he's too slow getting to his pull, and he allowed a penetration each time, once for minus 1 yards and once for minus 5 yards. He was jointly responsible both times, but it still wasn't good. So his pulls ended up being 3 of 7. That's points for the day, but he really made 5 of his 7 pulls. The problem is the two he messed up, he really messed up badly, so they ended up being resulting in losses. He ends up with 3 points. Other than that, he didn't miss many total points. He missed 3 other total points the whole game. And scored an A, 0.92 after adjustments. So very exciting. And if he's now at a point where he doesn't need to put the pieces together in terms of what he's done. He doesn't have to do everything well because he's done everything well at some point. He doesn't have to do everything well. If he could just pass block at 90% of this level, he's the Ravens' starting right guard for the next several years. If he can pass block at 80% of this level and do some of the other things, then he has a chance to stick at the position and be a decent player. So very excited about this from Falele. It's a huge step forward, and Ravens fans should have a big sigh of relief in terms of where he is. And you look at both guard positions. Remember, that's the place where the Ravens, you know, they expended a second round draft pick to get a right tackle, and they had McCary already to potentially take the load. But those guard positions is where we were really worried. A and A this week. Had both guards, so they led the way, and very exciting
for sure. And that's kind of the thing with Falele too, is a lot of the times when he loses, he's been losing pretty bad, and thankfully that is kind of went as the weeks have gone on, as it's starting to go away, and he's picking up his play. So I've been very impressed, and to your point, I was very concerned with the guards coming into this year. I was like, oh man, there's some of those teams are going to get those big defensive linemen in there, and they're just going to get their lunch taken. Because, I mean, as great as Tyler Linderbaum is against the run and working that level two, a lot of the times in pass pro, with him working on an island, sometimes is not as especially against some of the bigger defensive linemen. He's a fighter. He doesn't lose quick, but it's always nice to have a Zeitler next to him or someone who's stable and can work those combo blocks. But to see the Ravens' offensive line interior go out there and those two guards in particular is impressive.
Let me ask you a question now with regard to Falele. Obviously, the staunchest defender of Falele has been Harbaugh. Okay, in terms of him saying, "Look, if you think Cleveland is the guy, then you just don't know." I'll just tell you that if Cleveland should have been the guy, then he would be the guy. Do you credit Harbaugh with the decision to keep Falele out there? Now, we don't know yet if it's completely worked out, but he's playing at a decent enough level overall. And I'll look at all his games for the season so far, but so far grade wise, B+ in the opener, F, C, C, D, A. It's not great in aggregate, but it's certainly a little bit positive in aggregate. Yep, a little bit positive in aggregate. He probably, on the old PFF scale, he'd probably be about +2 for the year or something, +1 or +2 for the year. You'd sign for that in blood at the beginning of the year. Now, after this game, I'm not even sure we'd sign for it for the rest of the year at this level of average play, because the most recent, most pertinent piece of data, at least in our minds, is this extraordinary game.
Would I give Harbaugh credit? I'm not sure. I don't know if I have enough data yet to give him credit, and I'm a little more reserved when it comes to giving Harbaugh credit. But I'll give him some credit. It was certainly he's playing better than I thought. I thought Falele would go out there and it would just be F after F type of performance where he's just not putting it together. Right. But he certainly, and especially in the pass protection, seeing him stand up some of these defensive linemen is. And kind of be that. I mean, he's 6'9", 380 pounds. He should be a bully out there, and he certainly has been in the pass pro. So it's very encouraging to see.
Yeah, I honestly don't really see him using his hands as well as he should, but he's definitely doing a lot better than he was at tackle. And it's a better thing. You know, one of the things I've been surprised at how good he is, and he's still not perfect, but I think he might be the best guy along the center, right guard, right tackle group. Is in stunt exchanges. And by the way, if you can only have one guy who's really good at stunt exchanges in that three-man group, you want it to be your guard, because he's always involved in stunt exchanges, right? So he's in the middle of that. So you want it to be him, and he's been quite good at that. I've been really surprised, that has worked out. And I couldn't be happier with his current position. And part of the thing is, whenever you do this kind of work, you don't want to become too wedded to any particular position. And the fun of doing it is being surprised week after week by what happens and how people play, how it really scores out. I'm thrilled to have this turn of events and now have something interesting to talk about and be excited about Falele, the football player, for a frankly a change at this point.
For sure. And it goes hand in hand, especially bringing up the stunt exchange. Another thing that I just did not expect, like him being able to work in space and be that athlete and be able to go move laterally to pick up those stunts was, and a lot of things we saw in the past was, He struggled with speed rushers, and a lot of the times if you see a player really drive under his chest, Flele would kind of lose the rep. The rep would be over because the player would get inside his chest, and it'd be bad because the player can start doing what they need to do. But for him to go out there and against stunt exchanges, just kind of pass off and do what he needs to do is once again, I would give Harbaugh some credit. That's not something I saw. Just not something I had in the cards for Flele.
All right, let's move it over to right tackle. And Rosengarten did not have as great a game as he had the last couple of weeks. He had a couple of Bs in a row, so some very solid games. And those are his first two starts. Took a step back this week, gave up some pressures. 53 blocks out of 63, gave up 4 pressures, and they were all fulls. So no shared pressures in that group. 2/3 of a sack. Stanley kind of was let the pocket get phone boothed on the other side. But he gave up 2/3 of that sack. I have some detail on it in the article coming out if you want to look at, block by block, as a lot of people do. One false start penalty, and I saw that one of the false starts had been charged to Linderbaum within the PFF stats. So I was actually surprised by that, but I got to go back and look and see if there's something about that. They're usually very good, by the way, at picking up responsibility for the center or for a second player on a false start penalty. So it might have been either of those things, but it might have been a kind of a snap wobble or whatever that happened with Linderbaum, or even a late snap that where Rosengarten got charged with it. But a D for Rosengarten in this game. 5 blocks in level 2, 2 out of 2 on pulls were some positives to take from it. Everybody in the whole game had at least one pancake. You don't see that very often. Everybody in the whole game had exactly one highlight, which was something nice as well. So it was just a highlight combination block, nothing non-vanilla in nature, but still very effective and needed.
For sure. And that's with Rosengarten. He let up a couple of pressures this game, to your point. And, it's certainly his worst game by far, but you still have to be encouraged by the movement skills. It's still some of the pressures weren't like, he didn't die fast. Most of the pressures, he died slow enough where the play could still be had, and he wasn't out there being a liability. So certainly a step back, but nothing to discourage me from future outlook and the way he's played those past couple weeks before the game, where I'm still feeling pretty confident about him.
He has a pretty long leash at this point for losing that right tackle job. I think, it would have to be a series of about 4 games where he played at a D or F level to make me want to replace him. And then I think he'd be going back to McCary and try Voorhees again at left guard if that happened, or maybe going to Cleveland finally. I really don't know, but you'd be moving McCary back there, I'm pretty sure. The Ravens, it's been nice because this year so far, they really haven't had that injury. The Voorhees injury honestly didn't cost them at all by moving McCary there. They haven't had that injury, which has really cost them yet. So it lost a few snaps from Ronnie Stanley, and Josh Jones came in and played well. Lost a few snaps from Rosengarten, and Josh Jones played well on that side as well. So you're even thinking it's only 9 snaps. This is really getting out in front of yourself to think that Josh Jones might be an okay tackle when we have lots of other evidence that that's not the case, by the way, in his entire career. It's a good position that the Ravens line is in. By the way, I just want to finish off. Ben Cleveland made his only block in level 2. On a goal line snap. So that was a nice play for him in addition to the block field goal.
Yeah, that block field goal. I have to make a comment on that. That is the most hilarious thing, a sequence of events I think I've had around a player that's like probably like the most inconsequential player that he's out there, he's jumping 36 inches to try and block the field goal, and he ends up blocking it on the rep prior. So It's just funny that the whole Ben Cleveland saga and the fact that he's out there on special teams on the nose trying to block a field goal, and he actually, it's funny.
I think he was only out there because Broderick Washington was inactive this game, because Broderick is normally on the field goal block team. And I think they said that Ben Cleveland was only his second time that he'd ever been out there on the field goal block team. He's on the field goal kicking team. And it's a lot to keep track of because there's six units of special teams. I think that's right anyway. The field goal kick, the field goal block, the punt return and kick, and the kickoff return and kick. But you know, there's very few players. In fact, there's really no one who plays all six. Harrison is unusual that he plays five, and the Ravens were without him in this game. So this is, and they also were without Broderick Washington, who's on this team. So good opportunity, took advantage of it. He'll probably see more action there, I would guess.
I would hope so. I would hope so. I mean, for the special teams head coach, hopefully the special teams play gets. Usually, it's usually how it works. Usually, how it works. You get your special teams plays in, and then eventually you get some run.
All right. Well, this is a part of the show where we talk about some individual skill position players. Who would you like to talk about, Yuri?
I would Zay Flowers. I feel like that was it's pretty obvious, but he, I mean, that's probably one of the more dominant and defining performances from a Ravens receiver in a certain amount of time. He went out there and he made some very tough catches over the middle, and that's something the Ravens are missing is that element of tough catches over the middle. Mark Andrews hasn't been what he used to be in that aspect of working over the middle and being able to be that physical component. But Zay Flowers certainly went out there and it was a great game. It was just a very great game.
Yeah, very excited. And he had to get open. He had to get separation. He did it with suddenness. He's not, he's still not the route runner who makes the defensive back makes a mistake, but he's so sudden that he can still get away and did a very good job presenting a target. Didn't you know it's possible to get THC shipped right to your door? Mood delivers premium 100% federally legal THC directly to you. I'm talking about delicious high potency gummies, top shelf flower, home baked cookies, vapes, anything you'd find at a dispensary. You can now order online and have it shipped quickly, discreetly, and conveniently right to your door. And every Mood product is made from pesticide-free cannabis grown on America's best small farms at prices that won't destroy your wallet. Best of all, not only is every Mood product backed by a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but as I mentioned, listeners get 20% off their first order with code RAVENS. So head to mood.com/ravens, check out their online dispensary, and let Mood help you discover your perfect mood. And don't forget to use promo code RAVENS when you check out to save 20% on your first order.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are now boarding Group A. Please have your boarding passes ready to scan. If your phone is cracked, old, or was chewed up by your Chihuahua travel companion, please refrain from holding up the line. And instead, simply go to Verizon and trade in any phone in any condition from one of their top brands for the new Samsung Galaxy S25 Plus with Galaxy AI on Unlimited Ultimate and Watch or Tap, also on them.
Service plan required for Watch or Tap. Trade in and additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.
Good. I thought your partner, Huddle It Up Films, made a really good point. Jason always makes lots of good points. I'm not trying to condescend in any way here, but he wasn't drifting downfield with his crossing routes. He was crossing more flat, which then creates a better angle for Lamar to put the ball. A lot of those balls had to be feathered in there in a relatively thin area. Now, normally you have guys closing windows who can really create problems for those kind of throws. In fact, you know, linebacker closing a window is often one of the big risks for a crossing route. But there wasn't any of that in this game because everyone was committed basically to the line of scrimmage. You know, it was just such an opportunity to throw those routes. Lamar was right in, locked in, and Flowers helped him be locked in, and he would catch the ball. In a lot of cases, you know, especially with Ben St. Just out there, he just was not able to deal with Flowers' athleticism as even a average cornerback would. He's a big physical corner and very much out of sorts trying to cover somebody like Flowers.
And with Flowers, you made a very good point with the cornerbacks. It wasn't like Flowers was wide open. It was he had separation, but it was difficult catches being made in traffic and with the defensive back kind of draped all over him. So once again, to the point I made with, it's just, haven't seen a Ravens receiver be able to work over the middle so fearlessly like that in a while. I hoped that Rashad Bateman has certainly made most of his money in the intermediate, but the way with the defensive box being stacked and so many guys close to that area for Flowers to go out there and really kind of fearlessly catch them those balls. And I know if I was in his shoes and I feel that safety coming up and I'm like, oh, I don't know if I want to get this one, I might make a business decision. And another thing that I was very impressed with was he didn't do a lot of the dancing this game in terms of going backwards like he has in games past. Mm-hmm. This game he worked up field a lot and he made plenty of guys miss. And I thought a lot of his moves were very concise and to the point, which is encouraging.
Are you happy with where he's being targeted? Meaning really in terms of how they're using him scheme-wise, they're still not using him down the field on super high A dot throws, very little over cover three throws that he's sorry, over level three throws that he's making, very little 7, 8, 9 action. What he is getting, he's getting a lot in the middle of the field and he's getting a lot behind the line of scrimmage. I'm not arguing for a second, like the jet toss that he took forever many yards is a bad idea, or the 44 yard screen left was a bad idea. At least they worked out in this game. But are you happy with that in general? Because his A dot for the season has still been kind of low. I'd always kind of hoped he would do more than that.
For sure. Well, I saw earlier that his A dot was only up by just a slight amount over last year. So it's not, and we saw last year, the earlier parts of last year where he was just kind of being used as almost a pure gadget guy. Like he was using very, very little downfield work. I would say the defensive backs are very scared. Like they are very threatened vertically from Zay Flowers from the way I've been watching them play off coverage, and they're not willing to drive the ball against Zay Flowers because they're just very intimidated by his speed and suddenness. So I would like to see him get more involved in out routes, and then working double moves off of that. I think that's where the Ravens could probably get a couple of big plays out of is Zay Flowers out route is just his suddenness is breaking out. I mean that's one of the throws Lamar has probably the most anticipation with. Is Zay Flowers out routes. I've seen it plenty of times last year and this year. And I'd also like to see Zay Flowers double moves get worked in as well, because he's with that threat vertically and there's out, you mix the out routes in and every time it looks like he's breaking out, he goes back up the field. I mean, it's a big play waiting to happen.
Yeah. Zay is 7.9 average yards of target this year. And that might differ from ADOT on other sites. I'm quoting the next gen number here. It probably ranks in about the 30th percentile of all receivers. They don't have a number here, so I'm kind of just judging by eyeball where this is on the table. It's not anywhere near the top receivers in the league. You know, if the Rashid Shaheed of New Orleans is at 17.2 and Alec Pierce is at 25.1. They basically throw the deep ball to him only. DeMarcus Robinson is at 16.4. So there are a lot of guys who are much higher than him in terms of average depth of target. But I thought at least this game it was kind of a mix, and they were taking advantage of what he brought to the table to really take what the Commanders gave him in level two.
For sure, and that's where the Ravens probably spend most of their money. So majority of their time making money is in that level two spot.
All right, I'll talk about Bateman for a little bit since we're on the receiver topic. I really love how he's come on. Obviously, a lot of things could be very difficult for Bateman right now. And if you're a wide receiver, you might not be happy to start with in Baltimore because of what's going on. But he's still trying to block. I think he's done a good job with it on some individual plays here. He certainly saw some good blocks in this game that he's making. And boy, you block for your life in Baltimore if you want to stay on the field, certainly. His separation, we talked about in the first show, does not exactly match up with who Lamar is as a quarterback. He wants to see the separation, see the route get run, because it's part of how he deals with extending plays and trying to find a guy to okay. I don't want to get too nerdy here, but when a quarterback throws a ball to a wide receiver, he's effectively, whether he knows it or not, solving a series of differential equations in his head. Same way an outfielder tracks down a fly ball. They're trying to run to a spot where they're judging how that ball's hit and whatnot. He likes to have that a solution to him after the break of the receiver so that he can more easily see and visualize where he needs to hit that player. It's just who he is as a quarterback. And it, honestly, it minimizes some of who Bateman is. The other thing that has still been a problem is he kind of overthrows Bateman on some deep routes, which is, to me, is a trust issue. He doesn't completely trust Bateman to go up and get the football. I hope after a game like this that we see at least one really good trust deep ball to Bateman over, say, the next two games. I'd like to see one.
My pushback is with the Bateman deep balls I think it's almost a lost cause at this point with trying to continuously attempt it, because it just never seems to go well. They just never now, of course, the Huntley Bateman jump ball in 2021 against the Browns is a different, you know, style of quarterback and a different style of throw. But with the way Lamar layers his throws, it just doesn't ever seem like it's going to be something that those two click on. But I mean, if they're up by like 14, I would certainly be down with it. Just see what happens. But
all right. It's, you know, what he did for Beckham last year, he threw up a lot of balls, you know, where Beckham just had to go get the football. Obviously Beckham is extremely savvy in terms of drawing penalties as well. He created a couple penalties last year very effectively. So that was a nice byproduct of having Bateman on the team. We haven't seen that out of Rashad, and we have seen some problems with him not completely getting the handle on the football and ending up in the hands of the defender. You certainly don't want that. But boy, would I like to see him, you know, try. And I don't think you can reasonably put any limitation. If you're up 14, you're not going to be throwing that kind of a pass no matter what. So if you're either going to do it or you aren't, you're probably going to do it at some point where it is still meaningful to the outcome of the game if you're going to do it at all. And I would like to see it. It won't necessarily happen, and it may be a lost cause, but I would love to see it happen.
For sure. And my deep ball thing, I would love to see him get targeted between the safeties. I think that's behind, okay, if he gets behind the safeties, or if it's in quarters and he's moving from one hash to the sideline or the other hash to the other sideline. I think those are the spots I'd probably target him on the deep plays. So.
Okay, post, skinny post, kind of option like that that gets him in the middle of the field between two safeties, okay?
Yep.
All right. If you're going to throw deep against cover two, that's probably where you want to do it, and you want to try and outthrow both those safeties and hope that they're both guessing wrong on the outside, or you at least are one is guessing wrong and you can throw against the grain on the other one. Another player you'd like to talk about?
I can't. So he is a skill position player. I can't go without at least coming on here and talking about Charlie Kolar at tight end. I have to continuously. He's gone out there as a run blocker, and he's sealed off some great gaps. He's sealed off some great holes. He's worked the level two a couple of times, and then as a pass blocker as well. A lot of very impressive reps against Micah Parsons, against some of these edge rushers that are high tier guys. And it's not that he's going out there and pancaking them or anything like that, but he's gone out there and he's certainly maintained leverage against these guys. And he's making the most out of his targets as well. I mean, I think for a while there, he was, I think he is, if I'm not mistaken, averaging the highest yards per play out of the Ravens receiving group. I'm not too sure on that, but I know he's had two. He had a 50 something yard play. He had a 30 yard play. He had the touchdown. Mm-hmm.
He had 16.3 yards per target right now. So that's out of this world, but that won't hold up. That's, which is okay, but it's six targets right now. So.
So very, very impressed by him. And I just had to throw him out there. Anytime I get a chance to promote his propaganda, I will.
Yeah, very, very cool. And I've been very happy with how he's played this year. I wasn't sure he's going to get the kind of snap share he is, but he's taken some snaps from the big two, and he's also taken some snaps from Ricard in terms of being an inline guy. And if you're looking forward and you're looking forward to potentially a word without Mark Andrews, which I think the Ravens are staring right down the barrel of right now, I think one where you have Kolar and Likely is still pretty attractive. It goes from being the unquestionably deepest group on the team to now you're going to get a new developmental player, and you're going to decouple some of these two players. But would not surprise me if after 2025, that Kolar ends up getting a really big deal somewhere else. And we saw a couple guys do that. We saw who's the one who went to Minnesota, was it? The tight end, you know who I'm talking about. He played here.
Oliver, yep.
Oliver, right. And getting a big deal. Wouldn't surprise me if Charlie Kolar gets that kind of deal leaving this team, maybe even better than Oliver got.
For sure. And that's, and I'm sure the next team, he even made a joke about him being just a fat white guy. I'm sure the next team shave a little bit of weight off him and get him back into that receiving threat he was at Iowa and just not thought of so much as a pure blocking tight end. So
yeah, they fed that whole offense through him when he was there. All right, I got one other player I want to talk about, and that's Rasheen Ali. Didn't see a snap on offense in this game. No running back three has seen a snap so far for the Ravens this year. Didn't even find a way to get him in Pony, for example, which they did run a snap of Pony in this game. Ali was on, he was on special teams, at least on kick coverage. He might have been also on kick return. But the Ravens kind of have a decision coming up with him. They have a workload management issue with Henry, I believe. Okay, that you know, we don't have to agree on this, but I think they need to kind of restrict Henry's carries, get him down to 16 to 18 per game, maybe 15 per game even, and not 20 per game. And to do that, they're going to have to let Ali carry the ball some. Now, Ali has been a fumbler in college. He's had a big problem with that, which probably means the Ravens shouldn't have drafted him in the fifth round. They had better, you know, they had some really good options available that they didn't take then. But they decided to go with Ali. Now that they have, that decision's been made. He needs to not fumble the football and he needs to be in there. And I think we're probably fairly soon going to see him start to get a few carries. And it took Mitchell last year. How long did it take Mitchell to get his first carries? It was a while before they put him in the backfield, right?
Until the Seahawks game. At least, and even then, before then, they gave him a couple gimmick plays against the
Lions.
Yeah, so it took a couple of weeks for Mitchell to get involved, and I understand the Ravens' hesitation, but you got to find out. You just got to find something out about him because if not, I mean, he's just out there taking a spot.
And when Mitchell comes back, he's probably not going to be taking a spot, which means you're going to cut him, and then you don't know what you lost. So you've got to figure that out. You got to figure out. If you want to keep him around, I mean, it might be a case where injury will help make the decision for you. That's often the case, is that either Mitchell isn't ready or either Hill or Henry gets hurt, God forbid, and then you really need Ali there taking a share of the snaps, even if Mitchell is back. But if it plays out, you know, as it might play out, they've got room for Mitchell on the team because he was great last year. They might not have room for Ali, and they'll have to either decide whether they're going to cut him or IR him for the rest of the year because it's just a tough business decision in the league, and the fifth round draft pick is a sunk cost at this point.
For sure, and there was certainly better options available to your point, especially in the fifth round. Tyrann Tracy out of Purdue was my I was kind of banging the table for him, hoping he the Ravens were going to select him, but.
He looked pretty good to the Jets last night, didn't he?
The Giants on
the Giants. That's right. That's what I'm sorry. Yeah. Yep.
So,
all right. Let's go to the mailbag. Let's answer a couple questions here. We got a few good ones in here. All right. I think that one's intended for Friday morning GM. So, going to leave that one there. Okay. Here's one. Here's a good one. I'm not sure. I know the answer for this. Let's pose this one to Yuri. What do you take from the Ravens being higher than the Broncos and Jets in tight window throws? Those two teams have the number five and number two pass defense. The eye test for me tells a different story. This is from Paul 8879. That is a very detailed question. I'm not sure I'm completely understanding this, but I guess that might be a question about the defense, right?
If they're saying, is it about the defense?
Well, what do you take from the Ravens being higher than the Broncos and Jets in tight window throws? Doesn't really say against or for.
Oh, it's about defense because I remember seeing this earlier today.
Okay. And then those two teams have been number five and number two in pass defense.
So I would say is that the Ravens cornerback group is not a problem in separation or allowing like big plays. And I saw earlier it was a stat I posted about Brandon Stevens. He's currently number one in the league in the least separation allowed. So it's just that, one, Brandon Stevens is not getting his head around. So there's some yardage there. Two is between level two and level three, between the linebackers and the safeties. Kind of
both of my points, damn it. It took them both.
That's where most it's just it's so obvious to see on when you watch is just that's where most of the problems and most of the issue is that when the offense are striking big plays against us, it's there. And they still are taking some of those outside routes, and that's probably why the Ravens are a little more because they have such tight coverage and there's so many targets going to the outside. That's probably why they're so high up there in that separation target window. But when big plays are striking, it's over those level two and level three spots.
Okay, so back shoulder to Stevens, and we saw some of that. Between level two and level three, that's been a combination of all the inside linebackers getting burned some there. And it probably is also some of the slot corner getting burned against the Bengals as well in terms of getting plays made there. Burrow and Mahomes, two of the better quarterbacks, obviously, in terms of getting the ball to an exact spot to beat that guy that they select to beat. Pre-snap. So I would agree entirely. I thought your answer was perfect. I don't have anything to add to it.
Yeah, and the other thing I would add in there is they've also went on like a death row run of quarterbacks like Allen, Mahomes, Burrow, Prescott. Those guys are all top 10 and all can probably place the ball in very, very tight windows and very tight spots. And even though the Ravens pass defense is last and certainly needs fixing, there could be a little, effect of that to it. So
thanks for the question, Paul. That's one of the really great ones. Got another great question here from Zach Serpa-Weinberg. He's given us some good ones before. Lamar has significantly reduced his sack rate so far this year without reducing average time to throw. So he's still around 3 seconds for next-gen stats or average intended air yards, which is at 8.2 this year. What factors would you most attribute to that? Is it scheme, the pass protection, Lamar himself, or something else? And does it feel sustainable? First of all, just a great question. I think it really gets it a lot. By the way, Zach, this is why time to throw is such a difficult statistic to deal with. It has a different meaning for different quarterbacks. If you're a pocket quarterback, you don't want a lot of time to throw. Things go wrong after 2.5 seconds. And so you want to get rid of the ball quickly. If you're Lamar Jackson, that's where you make your money is between 2.5 and 3.5 seconds. And sometimes between 2.5 and 10 seconds in terms of running around the pocket and making a play. But this is a very interesting question. I think the pass protection probably has played a part this year, but I don't think it's been fantastic. It's been reasonably good at giving some ATS opportunities this year. Where are you on this?
I would say, one, they're not putting the offensive line in positions that fail a lot. They're not throwing them out there in five up. They're not letting them go out in five man protections. They're putting more tight ends and they're putting more Ricard that's on the field true. and that's kind of the big thing to me of why the offensive line and why Lamar has so much time to throw. It's because the scheme, one, the under center play action, Lamar Jackson has been almost perfect out of that. And it's because it's the Derrick Henry effect, it's the getting the more tight ends on the field. And all those things combined together to this positive game script destroying offense that is the current Ravens. Now, is it sustainable? We have seen them come back. This year when they were down, they did come back while also using 12 personnel and the same similar concept. I'd need to see another game if they were down again for them to work back in using more tight ends and using the similar play action under centers type of stuff. And letting Lamar have time to throw, because a lot of the times when Lamar has, to your point, more than 2.5 seconds, just this last week when he had more than 2.5 seconds, I think he was 13 for 19 for like 238 yards. So he went out there and it's one of those things. You give Lamar time to cook and he's going to cook.
It's I think one of the interesting things that I just took from that is it's a lot of this is dependent on the defense. Positive game script for a team like the Ravens is what creates one-sided, brutal, unfair massacres that we love from the Ravens. That they'll just beat a team to death if they can get a lead on them, Their defense can lean on them a little bit. And this defense needs to step up to help the offense have these positive game scripts where they can just rip the hell out of their opponents. The defense needs to step up with more turnovers. They need to do a better job in pass defense. They really, really, really need to do a better job in the middle of the field between level two and level three. And I'm looking at the two safeties in that regard. I think they're making one change. I think it's going to be a very big deal for the offense that Ardarius Washington is going to play more strong safety. For those of you who didn't listen to the defensive episode, second half of the game against the Commanders, Ardarius Washington was in the dime package at strong safety. Eddie Jackson remained in the game as the strong safety in big nickel. There is no reason in hell why you would retain Eddie Jackson's services at strong safety in big nickel when you wouldn't do it in dime. Dime is the higher leverage, higher value plays. So this rotation they were doing was strictly a matter to basically ease Ardarius Washington into the position. They're taking responsibilities and the most important responsibilities away from Eddie Jackson. I don't think he's played that well. I thought it was a risky signing, but I think that could really end up helping the offense is get a playmaker back there on the back end, a guy who has been finding the football all summer in camp, has done a great job in coverage so far when he's been on the field this year. He did give up the one touchdown in Dallas, but otherwise he's been absolutely terrific. And I think it's a good gamble. I don't think it necessarily will work out. I'm really kind of not optimistic about Ardarius Washington, the tackler on the back end. And then he makes some plays against bigger tight ends. And I think, yeah, let's go ahead and give this a shot. It's not like Eddie Jackson is the greatest tackler ever.
Right. And there's a lot of energy, and Ardarius is always around the ball. It seems like he's always making pass defenses, and the Ravens defense just flat out needs it right now. They're just kind of lifeless back there. And it's unfortunate to see, but they need some energy. They need some guys flying around to the ball. And I think Ardarius can certainly provide that.
And hopefully that helps the offense and we get into that. All right. Two excellent questions. That's all we have time for today. And I'm real sorry about that, but I know we have more in the hopper here. We'll try and get those two on the various shows including Friday Morning GM. Yuri, really appreciate you coming on. Great discussion. I appreciate you taking a little over 2 hours with us here to talk through this. Where can people talk football with you online?
Yeah, they can find me on X, or formerly known as Twitter, Yuri_Ravens. Ravens Way podcast on YouTube, and every Wednesday, 9:15, Huddle Up Films, doing a live show. You can come in the chat, interact. I will answer any question, no matter how outlandish or how serious.
All right. Well, I love having you guys. The local content creators for the Baltimore Ravens are at an outstanding level. And where they were a decade ago, nothing like now. I mean, there's been explosion in general in football analytics and whatnot, but the number of people who are really analyzing content at a very high level is much higher than it was. And it's just a very impressive group. Follow as many as you can. And I think there's a lot of them doing a good job. And Jason, your partner, Voss, who also I think has done shows with you, is he doing the Ravens Way with you right now? Or is that it?
So it's on pause. You know, he's got his thing going on with the restaurant and stuff. So, and, you know, I got the thing going on over here. So our schedules haven't overlapped, but we're working. You know, me and him, I love Voss. Voss is my guy. So I love talking ball with him.
All right. Anyway, the content creators are great. I'll point you to future content this week coming out. We'll have an interesting rundown of the Ravens free agents lost. And remember how serious a problem that was? You might not feel that same way after one last thing this week. I'm going to be talking to John Ledyard about the Tampa Bay Bucs game coming up on Know Your Foe. We'll have two matchups episode, of course, with Frazier Tafar, and I'm forgetting one. Friday Morning GM with Voss, of course. So those are the remaining shows for the week, and they're going to be a little more spread out this week with a Monday night game being in play. So keep looking all weekend for new content, and we'll have it for you. Yuri, thanks again for coming on.
Yeah, I appreciate you very much for having me on. It's always good talking ball with you. Always do appreciate our conversations. Usually very respectful and knowledgeable. So,
you too, my friend. It's what we're aiming for. And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.